So Venerable Dhamcha told me that the question came up, I guess, when you were debriefing, is it? Yeah, that, well, what do you do if you missed out on an opportunity and you feel guilty about it? Okay, first of all, guilt is not a virtuous attitude. Yeah, we often feel that if I feel guilty enough, I'm so terrible. How could I have done that or not done that? That the more we feel guilty, the more we're somehow atoning for what we did. We assume that. Wrong. Yeah. Feeling guilty does not purify negativity. Yeah. Regret does, and there's a big difference between regret and guilt. Okay, guilt is, there is a whole drama about how bad you are. Yeah, I know, I specialized in it for a while. Yeah, my family taught me how to be guilty. It was in our genes. So with guilt, the whole focus is on me, how bad I am, yeah? And underneath it is the subtext of, if I can't be the best, well, I'm gonna be the worst because somehow I'm different from everybody else. Okay, so we go around and around in our guilt. Nothing, guilt doesn't solve anything, okay? Regret, on the other hand, is something that is a very important step in purifying our negative karma. Yeah, we regret we did something, but we don't sit there and beat ourselves over the head about it at every opportunity. Okay? And I like giving the example of the stoves, you know, that they're electric stoves and they can be hot, but they don't look red and you could accidentally put your hand on them. If you touch, you know, a hot stove like that, do you feel regret? Yes. Do you feel guilt? No. You feel regret because you made a mistake. You wish you hadn't done that. You learned something from it, and you want to go on with the knowledge that you gained. Guilt is, you know, this whole, oh, I'm just so terrible, what can I do? Nobody's going to forgive me. I don't want people to know. What are they going to think about me? How can I ever forgive myself? We are the center of our own attention, you know, when we feel guilty. Okay, so we want to make sure that it's regret and that we then go ahead and purify, yeah, by changing our attitude towards whoever it was that we harmed, by doing some kind of virtuous action, yeah, and then to make a determination to try and avoid whatever we did that we don't feel good about doing. Try to avoid that in the future. Okay, so that works to purify negativity. You know, what should you do if you missed out on something and you feel guilty about it? First of all, get rid of the guilt. And, you know, if you have regret, you have regret. And then you learn from the opportunity. Yeah. Now, some things we may have regret for, but really there's nothing much we could have done. Yeah. Unless we were Superwoman and Superman and we could go in there and, you know, just like in the show, change everything, get rid of all the stuff, rescue the suffering people. Okay. We're not, you know, Superman was on TV. There isn't a Superman in reality or a Superwoman, you know? So, in many situations, for example, I at one point, I was asked to come and speak at a conference of people who were the relatives of people who committed suicide. Yeah. And one of the big things with the relatives and friends of somebody who killed themselves is they always think, I should have been able to stop them from killing themselves. If I had only done this, if I had only done that, if I could have, should have, would have, was supposed to. But the reality is that didn't happen. You know, you didn't do those things. Yeah. And even if you had, could you have stopped somebody from killing themselves? You know, if you walked in the room when they were starting to, you know, do something, yeah, you could have taken a weapon away, taken a noose away, taken the bottle of pills away. Okay. But otherwise, you can talk till you're blue in the face to somebody who keeps saying, I want to kill myself. You could talk and talk and talk. Yeah. And it doesn't get through to them. Yeah. Yeah, I had that experience with one woman I was counseling, and she had a good life. She had everything to live for. She was depressed, and we talked a lot, and I gave all the arguments and, you know, did the best I could. She was on one side of the country, I was on the other. And then I got word that she had killed herself. Yeah. I didn't feel guilty about it because I did what I could have. And it's when someone does that, it's their choice. It's nobody else's fault. It's their choice. Yeah. If you are encouraging them to kill themselves, there was a legal suit some time back about one young man who kept threatening to kill himself, and finally his girlfriend was said, just go ahead and do it already, you know, and he did it. That's not right. That's not right, encouraging somebody. But, you know, the fact of it is we cannot control other people, can we? We can't even control our own mind. Yeah, so we do our best. We do what we can. If it helps, great. If the person goes ahead and does that, what can you do? Are you going to follow them around all day and all night? Yeah, you can't do that. So you just have to accept it. And this was in that conference that I went to. This was a big point that came out for many people, you know, because people tend to self-recriminate. Yeah, I should have done more. But we did what we did. Yeah. And that's it. We can't go back and redo it. If, you know, if in fact we were not a very good friend to somebody, that's one thing. But if we did what we could as a friend, we can't control them. Yeah. And we have to accept that very sorrowful situation in which somebody takes their own life, which to us seems very foolish. Yeah. especially when you understand karma and you understand that killing yourself is not going to lead to stop the suffering. Yeah, it most likely will lead to more suffering in the next life. Yeah. Put it this way, how many of you were a little bit rebellious when you were a teenager? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I bet your parents talked to you till they were blue in the face, telling you about the disadvantages of this and the disadvantages of that. Yeah. Did you listen? I'm 16. I'm an adult. I can make up my own mind. I'm almost an omniscient Buddha. I know everything. Don't talk to me, Mom and Dad. Yeah? We are what is called a closed vessel, an upside-down vessel. Even the Buddha would have appeared in front of us and said, you know, for your own safety, don't do this. We would have gone, you know, don't tell me what to do, Buddha. I'm a grown-up. Huh? And so it is with some people that when we try and help, they are not receptive, and we cannot control them. Yeah? It's you know, this is where people really need professional help. Yeah? For example, okay, there was some famous person who I never heard of, but he was very famous apparently in the U.S. as an actor, a director of movies. People really loved him. And his son and they were very rich, lived in a very nice part of L.A. He had a good education, but he had a drug problem, yeah? And his parents did 15 black backflips and, you know, 1,284 somersaults to get their kid to listen. And he was in rehab 18 times between the age of 15 and 18. Yeah, 18 times his parents, who loved him, took him to rehab. Yeah, they wanted the best for him. He could not kick his drug and alcohol problem. Yeah. So these kinds of things in our life we have to accept. Yeah. And then learn what we can from them.
Yeah, Venerable, thanks for sharing. I would like to ask, right, because I have a relative that plans to take his own life in the coming years, and has been with us for about 8 years. So just want to understand what I can do to better prepare myself in the years leading up to him really taking his life.
Mm-hmm. Is he asking for assisted suicide because he's medically ill, or why are you concerned that he will do this?
Depression in general.
Depression, okay. The best thing then is to get him some professional help for depression. Sometimes people need medication. Yeah, medication can be very good. You know, sometimes it's a chemical thing in the brain. Sometimes they need therapy, you know, to have a counselor, a psychotherapist who they can talk to and work out some of these issues with. Sometimes they need both medicine and therapy. Yeah. So what you can do as a friend is try and encourage him, or if he needs a ride to get somewhere, you know, to a therapist or whatever, then give him a ride, encourage him, Yeah. Be his friend. And, you know, like I said, we can't control what other people do.
Yeah.
And it's such a tragedy. It's such a pity when people kill themselves. And it's so hard on everybody they leave behind. Yeah, it's so hard. At this conference, it was, you could really see, you know, people who had loved their friends and relatives, and then those friends and relatives committed suicide, and people were still grieving. Yeah. But grieving the loss of people that we care about is part of our life. And, you know, to learn to grieve in a skillful way. Yeah. But before that, we do what we can. Yeah. In the U.S. now, and Canada also, and also in some European countries, there is a movement towards assisted suicide. In other words, somebody who is terminally ill says, I'm suffering too much, I don't want to live any longer, but I don't want to kill myself in, you know, in an ugly way. I want a doctor to assist me, or friends and relatives, and give me the drugs. Yeah. So there's a big movement towards that. And there's a lot of controversy about it, because it could be abused, or it could be, you know, some people say it's my life, it should be my independent decision to end my life if I feel like it. But that view, I think, takes us out of the context of being somebody who other people care about. Yeah, other people care about us, and, you know, it's going to hurt them. And it's not going to really improve our situation. And especially, you know, sometimes when somebody's very sick with cancer and, you know, they want assisted suicide. From the Buddhist viewpoint, yeah, we say every moment that you have a precious human life is valuable. So somebody may be terminally ill. They can't get up and bow. They can't sit up and meditate. But they can think about the Dharma. They can recite prayers, recite texts. They can meditate on loving compassion. You can do all that while you're lying in bed. Yeah. And if they get to a point where they're barely conscious, then we play Dharma tapes for them so that they hear the Dharma, and that plants seeds in their mind. Similar, if you have pets that are dying, yeah, we've had, you know, that situation at the Abbey, and we just surrounded them and chanted and gave them instructions about how to die, and, you know, some people said, oh, you should just take them to the vet and have the vet euthanize them. And we said, no, you know, we can put good imprints on their life, on their mind stream, by letting them hear the Dharma. And then in a future life, yeah, those imprints will ripen and they will encounter a good teacher. They will learn the Dharma. They will progress on the path. So we have to stop thinking just about one life. Yeah, that's a key element in this, because if we just think about one life and we think about, I'm in pain right now, I want the pain to end, you're not thinking about, well, what's going to happen after that? And what are you giving up by not hearing more Dharma? Even you're lying in the bed listening, you know? Those Dharma seeds are getting planted. And it's so important to plant Dharma seeds in our mind. And so many people, you know, I teach, and Venerable Sangha Skadro teaches a few times every week, and we live stream the teachings, and people will send us pictures of their listening to the teachings, and their dog or their cat is there listening to the teachings with them. Yeah. And that's putting good, virtuous seeds on the animal's mind stream. Yeah. They can't understand it now, but in the future, yeah, in future lives, those seeds will ripen. Okay. So that's one way, you know, to help somebody if they are terminally ill and, you know, want to die. No, encourage them. Just keep planting good seeds. It will help you in the end.
Thank you, Venerable. I had a friend just call me a week ago. He's younger than me. And he told me that he had cancer, and I keep on thinking about missing out to do something for him, and I don't know what to do, and maybe
because he thinks he's going to miss out on the rest of his life.
No. I am thinking about I want to help him. He's far away because he's in Italy, and he just told me that, and I would like to do something, and I don't know what to do, and so.
Yes. Okay. Ask him how you can help. Yeah? That's the best thing. If somebody needs help, what can I do to help you?
Hey, Venerable. What happens if the person doesn't want to be helped?
If what? If
the person doesn't want to be helped at all. Doesn't want any help, like even though you can, like for example, drive him to therapy or what, but they refuse any help.
And they refuse. Well, maybe you could call the police. Yeah, and have them take that person, tie him up, take him to prison and say, you're going to be in prison until you listen to her, to your friend. I mean, what can you do? There's nothing you can do. Yeah, there's nothing you can do. You did what you can. They are rejecting help. What we can do is learn from it and make a determination ourselves that when we need help, we will ask people for it and we will let ourselves receive it. Or even if we don't ask and people see we need help, we'll let them help us. Rather than being somehow proud, I am too good to be helped. Yeah. Forget that, you know? That's not, yeah, okay? There's so much in life where you can look at what other people do and say, is that something positive? Is that something virtuous? Yeah, you learn from looking at what other people do and the results of it. And that helps you learn a lot about life and how to make decisions yourself.
Hi, Venerable. Thank you for your sharing. I feel that I'm missing out on my family relationships, so I'm undergoing through ambiguous grief. And I'm wondering how to detach myself from the attachment of family. Yeah. And how to cook through this grief.
Okay, so you're very attached to your family.
My mom passed, and my father and sister chose to embark on their own respective partners and family. And I think they do not have the capacity for me. They haven't been very present with my the last 10 of years.
Oh, so you're feeling you're missing out on the family and you would like to have a better relationship with them.
How to deal with the grief of this?
You're dealing with the grief. You're not going to try and have a better relation.
tried, but they are not willing to meet me.
Okay, you try to reach out. They're not doing anything. Yeah, you've tried everything you possibly can. No response. Well, you can call the police after this one, this lady does. You know? You can do, 15 somersaults. You can fly from a trapeze. You can, yeah? Yeah. So it's a process of accepting things, yeah? And one thing in life that we painfully have to learn to accept is we don't always get what we want. It's true, isn't it? Yeah. Anybody here who's gone through their whole life and always gotten everything they want, never had any problems? There's nobody, you know? This is part of samsara. So this is why we want to get out of samsara, because we're tired of having this kind of grief. Yeah. The Buddha, there's a story about this in the scriptures. There was a lady who had a baby and the baby died. And she was just hysterical because, you know, mothers love their children more than anything else. And so she was holding the corpse of her baby, walking around the town, knocking at every door, saying, you know, help me, help me. And finally she went to the Buddha and said, Buddha, what can I do to bring my baby back to life? You know, or what can I do to get over the grief? And the Buddha said, bring me some sesame seeds from a home where nobody has ever died. So sesame seeds in ancient India were a very common thing. People had them in their house. Yeah, everybody had them. So she was carrying her child. She went door to door, knocked, can I have some sesame seeds? Yes, you may. Oh, but has anybody died in this family? Yes. Oh, well then, I forget it. I'll go on, then go to the next lady, the next family, you know. Can I have some sesame seeds? Oh, yes, of course. Oh, has anybody in your family died? Yes. And finally, what she realized is that every family has experienced loss. It wasn't just her. And that this loss is part of the samsaric condition of birth, aging, sickness, and death. Yeah. So what we want to do is familiarize ourselves with this awareness that people are going to die and we're going to die. Yeah. And I did this in terms with my family, okay? And really thought of my mom dying, my dad dying, you know, my siblings dying. And really thought, you know, they're going to die. And yeah. And I did this repeated meditation, not as a thing to get depressed on. It isn't depressing. It's just the fact. It's the fact. And so I familiarized myself with it. And when my mom died, you know, I just went down, I helped, I did what I could, came back. Yeah. When my dad died, it was my mom we had expected to go. She had been sick and in and out of the hospital for a long time. My dad was old. He was failing, but he still had some life in him. So my sister it was going to be his 93rd birthday. So she had a party for him, just with the family. You know, I lived in another place. I couldn't go. But my dad likes barbecued meat. Yeah. So they made his favorite food, cut it up in pieces. He started to eat a piece of meat, and he choked. And he died. It got stuck in his... He swallowed it the wrong way. Yeah, he started turning blue. He fell off the chair. And within a couple of minutes, he was gone. Yeah. So my brother called me, yeah, and told me. And my first reaction was, oh, but I just talked to him yesterday. Which is such a stupid reaction. Because we never know when somebody's going to die. Yeah. Even people are in the hospital, you know, on life support and probably going to die that very day. They think, oh, I'm not going to die today. It'll happen in the future. So that idea that, you know, death doesn't happen to me, it doesn't happen today, it doesn't happen to the people I care about. That is our mind rejecting the reality of living on this planet, yeah? Which is why we want to practice the Dharma so we can end this cycle, yeah? So after I said, oh, I just talked to him, then I realized, come on, you know, that doesn't make any difference. And, you know, and I accepted it. What could I do?
Venerable, thank you very much for your teachings and guidance. My question is, what attitude should I adopt when reading your book? In a sense that I'm actually very happy to come across the book of Don't Believe Everything You Think. It struck me, so I further purchased the book of Turning Adversity into Joy and Courage. Uh-huh. And I know that these two books are related to 37 Practice of the Bodhisattvas.
Yes.
But the challenge that I'm facing is that when I come to read the first three chapters, I already have an angelic mind and a demon mind fighting in terms of understanding the text.
You already have a what mind?
Angelic and demonic mind fighting.
Oh.
The reason is because the text itself lays the virtues of what we should adopt in terms of practice. But to me as a lay person, I find that it is really challenging.
Yes. So why didn't the Buddha make the path easier? Yeah, you're going to file a complaint to the Buddha. Dear Buddha, yeah, the path is too hard. Please make it easier.
I take it as it is my defilement. It is my attachment. But at the same time, I'm trying to reflect myself, what attitude should I adopt in it? Because I was sharing with Venerable Damcho years ago that I stopped at chapter 3, I closed the book, and I'm thinking of attempting again for the second or third time. So as what you have always encouraged us, don't take the book as it is. Bring the book and read. So I was like, what should I do with it?
And I'm supposed to solve your problem?
No, but could you please advise me, is there any, what attitude should I adopt in reading that book so that
you should adopt the attitude of I have a precious human life, which is very difficult to attain. It's not just a precious human life is not just any human life. It's a human life where you can, at your senses function, you live in a place where there's access to the Dharma, you have Dharma friends, you have teachers, you have everything going for you. Yeah? And so rejoice in your precious human life and say, I want to make good use of it. I don't want to waste it sitting there saying, well, yeah, I'll read the book, tomorrow. Okay. The other day, somebody asked me a question similar to this. And I was telling them about one man who has contacted the Abbey and who has come to the Abbey two or three times already. He is blind and deaf. Okay, think about that. Yeah, you're sitting here, you can hear, you can see. He can't do either of those, but he wants to learn the Dharma. You think he's going to put forth some special, have to put forth some special effort to learn the Dharma? You bet. Yeah, he can't hear the teachings. He can't read the books. He contacted us. He wants to learn the Dharma. So now they have some sort of equipment. Yeah, I think what I'm about to tell you is a few different machines working together. He's in his place, which is in a different state. I'm at the Abbey. We have a Zoom call. He will type in a question, in Braille on his computer. It comes out on my computer in regular language. Yeah, I answer the question. There's another nun sitting beside me, and she'll type what I answer, in regular letters, send that. It goes to him, it goes through his machine, and it comes out in Braille, and he can read the Braille. He has many, many questions about the Dharma. He even went to India. Can you imagine going to India and being deaf and blind? How in the world are you going to find your way around? He had an interpreter, someone who interprets into sign language or Braille, and that person helped him. But he's really determined to learn the Dharma. And he just puts out that extra effort to do it. So when we have the opportunity and we're free from those kind of hindrances that he has, let's, use our time and use our energy as best as we can instead of putting things off and saying it's too hard. You have a child. Yeah, you have two kids. When your kids come home and say, "Mommy, my teacher taught this lesson and it's too hard. I don't want to do my homework." What do you do? Do you say, "Oh, yeah, no problem. Yeah, go out, have some fun. Go ask venerable children what to do." No, you say, "Let's sit down and I'll help you, with your homework. And then when they get going, you leave and let them continue by themselves." Yeah, so you have to say to yourself, "Okay, I don't feel like studying right now, but I'm going to." Okay?
Venerable, I just have a question about compassion. I find it hard to... in my dealings, in terms of selfless giving, I think when we interact with strangers or people not close to us, if we practice generosity, and if they don't reciprocate, I think sometimes you just move on. But I find it hard when it's our close ones, our family members, when we do sacrifice some of our personal time for them, and then yet it's not reciprocated. And then when it's not reciprocated, we feel hurt or we feel unappreciated, and sometimes there's resentment as well. So I think with that, how do we actually practice that compassion and without expecting something back in return, especially for other forms.
It's amazing how ungrateful people are, isn't it? I know nobody here is ever ungrateful. Now, none of you are ever ungrateful. Yeah. But other people, with our kind, benevolent heart, we sacrifice everything to help them. And then they don't even say thank you. And the least they could do is give us a present and help us back because they owe us something. We help them. Yeah, you better give me something back. Yeah, so we're making our what looks like compassion into a business deal. I'll do something nice to you, but you better do something nice back to me. Okay? Otherwise, I am going to be mad at you and never speak to you for as long as I live. Yeah, great. Great way to have good family relationships. Yeah. My family is full of people who vowed never to speak to another relative. Yeah. My goodness. It's so foolish, so stupid. The Dalai Lama says, when you act with compassion, don't expect it to be reciprocated. Yeah, you just give. Yeah. If they say thank you, great. If they don't, that's okay too. Yeah. If they give you a present, great. If they don't, yeah. But the least they could do is tell the world how wonderful and compassionate and kind you are. But they may not do that either. So His Holiness Dalai Lama said, when you help somebody, the happiness is in your act of doing something for someone. Your happiness is not in receiving a compliment or a thank you or a gift. Your happiness is seeing the other person happy. Yeah? And your happiness is the feeling you have of being able to be compassionate and, you know, lighten somebody's mind a little bit. Yeah. I mean, the more we expect things from people, then the more we're setting ourselves up to be upset if they don't do what we think they should do.
Sometimes when I do analytic meditation and I think about the good things that I do, not because I'm expecting something bad, but after doing the analytic study, I was wondering, why am I doing this good thing? Is it because I am guilty of having the precious human life, of having good situation in Singapore, that we are protected, we are safe, we have everything that we have. We have Dharma Talk, we have you, we have Venerable Dang Chua, Venerable Kuan Chua and everything. So in a way, I feel a bit guilty. It makes me feel like I want to do good. Yeah. I know it sounds silly, because when I analyze why am I doing good things, I keep on thinking, is it because I'm fortunate? That's why I want to do good. So, it's a bit disconnect.
So your problem is you think you're doing good things without having a good motivation?
I felt like that.
Okay.
Because I want to have a good motivation when I'm doing good things. Uh-huh. But I feel that I'm doing good things because I felt that I am guilty in a way that I am privileged enough to be in Singapore. I'm privileged enough to have this precious human life.
Okay. Instead of feeling guilty, Yeah. Think, I have this fortune. I want to use my fortune to benefit others. Yeah. I have goodness. I want to give it. Yeah. Kind of like, what do they call it? A paying it forward. Yeah, which is a nice thing to do. You know, sometimes, I don't know if it happens here, but in the States, when you do a drive-out order?
Drive-through.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the preposition. A drive-through order, somebody will say, I want to pay for the order of the people ahead of me, or I want to pay for the order of the people behind me. And those people are strangers. But they just do it because it's like, oh, I can do that. And it'll let somebody know that other people care about them, that there's goodness in the world. It's a small thing, but it really touches people's heart. So there's so many small things we can do in our life like that to be of benefit and help people. Yeah, so you have a lot of privilege. Then use that to be a benefit. And don't drive yourself crazy by going, why am I doing it? Is my motivation correct? Maybe it's not. I don't know. Oh, no, no. Yeah. Okay. So we're going to really rejoice at what we did today. Rejoicing is important. Rejoice at our own virtue. Yeah. All of you created virtue today. You came here, you listened to things about the Dharma, you did some prayers and changed your attitude, you learned something. Rejoice at your own virtue. And we did it together as a group, which makes what we did very powerful. So rejoice at the virtue of everybody here, not just your own, but everybody's virtue here. Yeah. And so then we send, imagine sending that virtue out like light, you know, going throughout the universe, touching other sentient beings and pacifying whatever pain they have and giving them peace in their minds. And so think like that as we dedicate.